Troy LaRavier, you've probably heard that name or read it in print in the last 6 months. You've heard him here on WGN Radio many times here with me, at least three or four times we've had Troy LaRavier here in studio or on the phone. He was the principal of Blaine Elementary School on the north side, an award-winning school, has done great things there, has also garnered a little bit of controversy here and there, and admonitions from CPS at various times. And Troy, you've been very candid about that, and you've been very outspoken about, yeah, I've gotten in trouble for this. I've gotten my bosses who I like in trouble at times, but it's very hard for you to say, I'm not going to say anything where I think something should be said. Is that fair?
I believe that is fair. You know, I got in education for a reason. I wanted to make sure that every kid that came through my classroom got what he or she needed to realize their full potential. And I've never forgotten that. And so whenever there's something that gets in the way of that, I do what I can to address it.
It's funny, though, because you're a teacher, you're an educator. Even though you're principal, you're an educator. And one of the basic tenets of education, rightly or wrongly, over the years has been certain rules have to be followed. We have to listen and do things a certain way. And maybe that's not always right. Maybe there's battles that need to be waged there. But there's a certain orderliness to a classroom. There's a teacher, there's kids. We follow rules. We have interaction. Hopefully we have a great year. And your teacher, so to speak, CPS, your bosses, were trying to tell you, you can't do certain things, Troy. You have to stop doing this or else you're going to get in trouble. And sort of like me back in Catholic school in the day, I got a lot of warning slips and then detentions. Eventually, you were kind of put on these probations, and then they finally pulled the trigger and removed you as principal from Blaine Elementary. Is it fair to say some of it is you brought upon yourself because they said you can't keep doing these things?
So, context. I was in the military.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I understand following orders. But when you get to a point where the orders that you're given are in stark contrast to the very purpose of the institution, when you see that the institution with decision after decision after decision is making it more and more difficult for principals, for teachers, to give students what they need to develop the knowledge and the skills they need to make better lives for themselves, you have to make a choice, a moral choice. I had a principal call me one day after they made the budget cuts, and this I swear this is what this man said to me. He said, I feel like what I have to go and do is immoral. He said, and I don't know if I can do it. I don't know, like, when I pass and I have to meet my maker, and he asks me, why, he asks me to sort of answer for the things that I've done in my life and the decisions. And when I have to answer for what CPS is asking me to do, he said, I don't think God is going to accept the answer. I was just following orders. And that was deep. And that epitomized the position that many principals, and I can't speak for all of them, but it certainly epitomizes the position that many principals find themselves in. They feel like they're being asked to do something incredibly immoral. And when you look at the larger context, the immorality is heightened because you see that it wasn't necessary. You see that the condition that CPS is in right now came about as a result of decision after decision after decision to waste resources that are supposed to go to students and to take those resources and redirect them towards people who already have more money than they will ever spend in their entire lifetimes in terms of the people who are behind the mayor's office, the people who donated to the campaign, the Goldman Sachs, the Bank of America, the Northern Trust, the Aramark, the Sodexo. I remember seeing a front page cover story. It was the Chicago Tribune, and it was called Inside Rahm Emanuel's Political Cash Machine. And they listed his top 60 donors and showed how each and every one of them got some kind of benefit, be it financial or by appointment, mostly financial, some kind of benefit in return from City Hall in exchange for that campaign donation. I mean, this was front page headline news, but this administration has so many scandals that scandal is no longer news, right? You get a front page story where they're analyzing your campaign donations and how each one of these donors got some kind of benefit from City Hall or from the school system after that donation, and you can remain in office. That is insane.
Well,
but again, going back to your question, so that order that we're supposed to follow comes in that context.
Yeah.
That immoral context.
And you feel the same way that principal spoke to you, that I cannot not speak out on this.
Absolutely.
Okay. So then the question becomes, and I'll be Rahm Emanuel's administration for just a moment here. Sure. I think they would say, and this is just a guess, but that they would say, we fully support Principal Laravier's assertions that he needs to raise questions, that questions should be answered, that we should be transparent, and all of these things. But there is a way to do that, and there is insubordination. That they would say, argue there's emails you could write, there's questions you could raise internally, that you publicly again and again and again did these things and after you'd been asked not to.
So as a public official, he doesn't get to set those boundaries. You know, I'm a resident of the city of Chicago. One of the great mistakes that's made here is to assume that somehow the mayor is our boss. He's not. You know, we're his boss. We put him in office. He doesn't hold us accountable. Our job is to hold him accountable.
As a citizen, but as a principal.
As a professional, as a citizen, even as an employee of CPS, the mayor's office, no one in the mayor's office is directly sort of, we're not responsible for him. Now, in terms of the Board of Education, perhaps you can make that argument with Claypool, but you cannot make that argument with the mayor's office. Legally, they have no legal direct line of authority over principals. They appoint the person that has the direct line of authority. And so you, as a principal, as a citizen, as a professional, as a resident, it is my job to hold that office accountable. And the way I've seen it throughout my entire career is that, or at least throughout the last 3 years when I've been more far more vocal, is that as an education professional, it is my job to ensure that the public has the information that they need to make informed choices at the ballot box. And democracy doesn't end at the ballot box. Once you put them in office, you have to hold them accountable. And what do you need to hold them accountable? The same thing you needed to make an informed choice at the ballot box: information. Information on how their policies are actually impacting our students. And so if you don't, who is there out there that is in a better position to give the public that information than principals? We are in one of the most unique positions in this system because we are at that nexus, that point between where the policy is created in board meetings and in state legislatures and where it gets implemented in schools. They hand it to us and say, make it work. And so like no other group of people in the system, we see when policy has a positive impact, and we can also see the damage that policy causes. And so that voice is probably one of, if not the most important voice in terms of informing the public about the impact of the policies of the people they put in office so that they can, one, make good decisions, and two, hold them accountable while they're in office. And so we have to exercise our responsibility, not just right, but responsibility to inform the public about the impact of these policies.
Not to say that it shouldn't be, but traditionally that's not been the role of a principal ever, though, has it? I mean, aren't you saying anybody could say, well, it's my job to speak out on certain things, but as a principal, as the head of a school, couldn't the argument be made that you shouldn't be politicizing certain things? You're sitting here right now wearing a hashtag resign Rahm t-shirt. You've been in here before wearing another article of clothing with that. So I can see where the argument is made. Listen, you're an employee of CPS, or you're representing CPS. You're a principal. Yes, you need to be a leader. Yes, you need to speak out. But you're supporting Chuy Garcia. You're supporting Bernie Sanders, and you're politicizing a lot of this. And you could say, hey, it's a political thing. But is there a line that gets crossed over that you can understand where the administrations are getting upset with you?
Well, again, politicizing is a word, right? The civil rights bill you could say that was politicized. You know, politicize is a word we put on things where we want to paint them in a bad light. What I look at is what's actually happening. What's behind that word? And once again, we have one horrible policy after another negatively impacting our students. and as an education professional. And again, you said that's not our, you don't know if that's, you know, that's traditionally been our role. If you look at the responsibilities or the standards that are set by the education profession, particularly the organizations that define the standards for how principals should act professionally, in almost every case, there is a standard that says that we have a responsibility to impact public education policy and to influence public education policy. That, so that's not just a right, but it is part of our professional responsibility to do that. And so if we don't do that, we are being derelict in our duty to impact policy in a way that positively impacts students. So
you're listening to Troy Laravier. He was the principal of Blaine Elementary. Recently, CPS reached out and removed him from that position while he was running for another position with the Chicago Principals and Administrators Association. We'll talk about how that went down next. Matt Bubala with you on 720 WGN. Matt Bubala here with you on Radio 720 WGN, filling in on the download for Justin Kaufman. A little later in the show, Nikki Allen from Knife and Tine is coming in. Patty Vasquez's favorite bartender will be here because a friend of mine thinks that she has created a new drink, and Nikki is going to make it for us, test it out, and see if it's a good summer addition to the Knife and Tine menu, as well as talk about good drinks that you can make on the porch in the summer. Troy, you happen to have a little bit of time off recently. Have you made a good drink sitting on the porch in this nice weather recently?
I have not.
Need to do that once in a while, my man.
It sounds like a good idea. I think I might make one when I get home.
You need to do that. You need to sit on the porch in this beautiful weather, take some time and reflect. Maybe have a Moscow Mule, maybe have a good Tecate, something like that. I don't want to get you in. Yeah, you're right. You don't need sound bites if you're talking about
both
drinks.
Sound
don't need
appetizing.
Any of that. You don't
both
need any of that. Principal Troy Laravier is in studio with us. No longer Principal Troy Laravier, although I guess entitled still, because where are we at? Can you talk about what the latest is? Are you still on paid leave at the moment?
No. I was suspended without pay a couple weeks ago.
Well, that's not good.
Right. But I've just been named or elected as the head of the Chicago Principals and Administrators Association. And so it's going to be an interesting way. It's going to be an interesting transition. It's probably too much legal stuff in there for your audience to actually.
Well, we'll get to the new job in a minute. You had one more thought, though, as we went to break there on what we were talking about on responsibilities and speaking out and where lines have to be drawn.
Right. So, and you said, is this traditionally the role of a principal? Well, we have to remember that traditionally we've never had an administration that has been this fiscally reckless, this corrupt, and this incompetent.
You realize you're in Chicago now. Those are some bold statements to make, that we have never had an administration this corrupt.
And CPS, in terms of the management of CPS finances, we have not, in my memory, I'm just 45 years old, terms of in my political life, maybe the last 20 years or so. But we've never had to deal with administration that's been this reckless and this corrupt. And I mean, we actually have a mayoral appointed CEO who is going to prison if she's not already in prison, in terms of Barbara Bird Bennett and that Supes principal training contract. And it's interesting you asked that question, because one of the first things I ever spoke out on was that contract. You know, there are about 45,000 employees in CPS. Do you know how many of those employees actually went on record publicly criticizing that contract before the FBI started their investigation?
No.
One.
Just you.
One. And so if we don't criticize it, if I don't criticize it, if we don't bring that corruption to light from the position we're in, then who will? In terms of the Aramark contract. You know, $340 million going to two companies, supposedly to clean schools, left our schools filthy. If we don't bring that to light, who will? The $10 million they spent on furniture for their central offices while they were cutting school budgets across the city. If we don't bring that to light, that is our job. You know, people say this thing, Troy bites the hand that feeds him. This is what happens when you bite the hand that feeds you. This is someone who doesn't have an understanding of my relationship with the taxpayers and the mayor's office. You know, the taxpayer is the hand that feeds me, and the mayor's office is robbing the taxpayer. And so in criticizing the mayor's office for doing that, I'm not biting the hand that feeds me. I'm biting the hand that's stealing from the hand that feeds me. That is our job. That's what a watchdog does, literally. You bite the hand that steals from the hand that feeds you. And so we're living up to our responsibilities as public watchdogs, as public employees, and as public servants.
Okay. You were the only one that criticized that contract. I imagine you've been the only principal that's done a lot of things over the last years. Why is that? Why do more principals not speak out? Is it because they're overwhelmed just trying to run their school because they don't want to speak up on these things? Or are you paying a lot closer of attention to things than other people are?
So, you know, I think we have to start the answer to that question is by saying I wasn't always speaking out. You know, I was one of them. You know, I was one of the people in meetings and trainings during the lunches, and we're gathered around a table and we're talking about all of these things. We're talking about how horrible the Supes training is. We're talking about the Aramark contract. We're talking about the insane way they implemented the longer school day to take professional development away from teachers and have them show up at the same time. We're talking about all of this, but none of us, including me, had said anything publicly. And so I remember being in that position. I remember the first time a reporter came to Blaine, Becky Vivi from WBEZ, and it was during the teacher strike. And I remember trying to give her some information, but I didn't want to email it to her because I didn't want to trace back to me. Sure. So I remember feeling that. But for whatever reason, and I can't tell you, Matt, but there was just a moment. There were several moments, actually. I remember one with my son. I was reading him this book. It was called One, and it was a story of colors. And it was the color red, the color blue, the color yellow. And the color red was a bully, and he was bullying blue. And I'm reading this to my son. I'll never forget this. The other colors didn't stick up for blue. And so red got bigger and bigger and bigger, and all of a sudden red was intimidating everybody. And then in the middle of the story, this new character gets introduced, and the new character is the number one. And number one, when Red comes in to bully everybody, Red, the number one, stands up. It's like, no. And he stands firm. And so Red gets smaller and smaller and smaller. And eventually, Red loses his power because one stood up to Red. And eventually they reintegrate Red into the group, and they're all having fun. And the story ends with the phrase, all it takes is one. All it takes is one. And I'll never forget, I read that line to my son, and I looked at him. You know, and I'm reading him this story to teach him a lesson about standing up and being strong. And I'm like, I can never read this story to him again unless I live it, right? I can't say, Zaron, be brave, Zaron, stick up for people if I can't do it myself. And that was one of the central events in that progression of events that led to me ultimately making the decision to begin to speak out, whether anybody else would or not.
Okay, so CPS put you on probation like last year. I remember we talked to you after that, and then you kept speaking out, you kept doing what you felt you needed to do. They remove you from office. Right after spring break, during spring break, going into spring break?
During spring break. It was the last day it was right before the furlough days. And so principals, we worked during spring break. We were supposed to work that entire week. But because we had furloughs on Thursday and Friday, we worked Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And
those were furloughs for the budget?
So yeah, Thursday and Friday were furloughs. And so it was at the end of the day on Wednesday, and the way the whole thing went down was just is suspect as the timing of it.
I always thought it was interesting whether or not it was the right thing to do, whatever. We could talk about that all night. Odd to me to do it with just a couple months left in the school year, because I think for CPS and with how you are, let's get him out in mid-June and just tell him he's not coming back next year, when it's less likely you're able to talk about this, or less likely Blaine parents are going to be all together, be rallied together. It was suspect to me in that. So I'm thinking, okay, they had to have weighed that. Whoever made this decision, why do we do it right now?
So there's a series of events that explains that in my mind. First, I get an email that Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
It goes to my inbox. I never get it because I'm out on Tuesday taking my son for a minor surgery. But it's an email. It's very vague. It just says there's a meeting about ethics. we want you to go to. So I never get it. Before that email was sent, the previous Thursday, I got another email on my CPS account from someone who was very close, an insider, in terms of this new Sodexo Magic contract. Mm-hmm. If you might remember, this made headlines because right after Sodexo Magic got an $80 million contract to clean schools, one of its chief investors, Magic Johnson, handed the mayor a $250,000 check for his campaign fund right in the heat of the last race. And so that same company is now in line to get that contract expanded despite the poor job it's done. And so one of the insiders contacted me because he heard I was running for the presidency of the Principals Association, and he felt principals should know about the details of this contract, that it was not a good deal for schools. And so this is on my CPS account. And so we set up a meeting for the following Wednesday. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, I'm running for president of the Principals Association, and I have another meeting with principals set up for that following Wednesday as well. And so when I get to that meeting for principals, it's at Stevenson School on the South Side. There's a network chief at the door and two CPS security guards, and they will not let anyone in the meeting. And they tell one of the principals that this is an illegal principals meeting about Aramark and Sodexo. And I'm thinking, why in the world do they think I'm having a meeting about this? Is a principal's meeting.
Yeah.
The only Aramark Sodexo-related meeting was the one that the guy emailed me about.
Yeah.
And that had nothing to do with this. That was a separate meeting. How in the world did she get that? I didn't tell anybody about that. And so, you know, CPS made it very clear when you open your Gmail account that there's a statement you sign off on that it is subject to be monitored.
Sure.
And the only communication I had about that meeting was through that email account with that insider. And so it seemed that they came in at the last minute. So they give me that. They send me that email on Tuesday about there's a meeting about ethics. On Wednesday, they come in to shut down that meeting. They shut the meeting down. I leave the meeting. We relocate to a restaurant. We have the meeting. And then I go to the house in Beverly. And when I get out there, there's a car waiting in my driveway. Waiting in my neighbor's driveway. And the guy gets out of the car. He walks up to me and he says, "Are you Troy LaRavier?" I say, "That depends on who you are." And he opens his jacket and pulls out a badge. And I never got the jurisdiction. I didn't see it long enough. But right after that, he pulls out a letter telling me that I've been reassigned.
Uh-huh.
And so in the span of 5 days from that Thursday or Friday when I got the first email from the contract insider to the Tuesday when I get the email about that was supposedly about a hearing, but it didn't say hearing, to the Wednesday when they shut down the principal's meeting and have a guy waiting outside my house with the letter saying that I've been reassigned. It seems like it was done hastily and recklessly in order to prevent what they thought was the same meeting. They thought that meeting with the Sodexo insider was the meeting with principals and that I would be connecting that head with that body.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something they didn't want because this is a contract that's going to take additional hundreds of millions of dollars away from CPS students and send it toward another Rahm Emanuel campaign contributor. And they had to prevent that from happening. That is the only way I can see that haste, that recklessness making any kind of sense.
It's 9:37, Radio 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Showcase Studio here on Michigan Avenue. It is a gorgeous night outside. Troy LaRavier, I'm not going to say principal anymore because you're not a principal anymore. You're the incoming president of the Principals Association, but you're not a principal. Is that weird?
I still feel like I'm a principal.
Well, you can feel like all you want.
And technically, I am still a principal.
Technically, you are.
Technically, I'm still in a principal position. And until that is rectified or finalized.
And that's going through a process that involves meetings and papers and signings and stuff like that?
Involves lawyers and lawyers.
Yeah. You're not technically fighting that. You are fighting it because you could get reinstated, then you have to resign, correctly, to become the president of the Principals Association.
Again, that's typically, this is boring stuff, but typically what happens is that the CPS puts the principal on something called loan.
Mm-hmm.
To the organization, and the organization then reimburses CPS for that principal's salary.
Well, I'm guessing that when they're meeting at CPS, they're going to go, we're not putting this guy on loan to anybody because he's annoying the snot out of us. So they can just go fly a kite.
We'll see.
The president, historically, the president of the Principals Association then is drawing a principal salary paid out of a CPS budget or paid out of the dues of the members of the Principals Association?
Paid out of the budget of the Principals Association.
Okay, so we don't have to worry about CPS going, hey, well, guess what? Cutting that off, because that's not where it's coming from anyways.
Right.
You officially take over when?
July 1.
July 1st. So you got a little time to ramp up. Is it weird? I'm sure it was weird when you were removed. I'm sure you saw that there's a possibility of that coming down the road at some point because you decided to keep speaking up because you felt you needed to. So it wasn't like an incomprehensible shock that this happened, I'm sure. But is it weird this time of year, especially not going to Blaine every day, not having the same routine that you had for, what, past 4 or 5 years?
Nothing in CPS is weird anymore, Matt. Nothing. But, you know, I got some cards. I got this great photo that one of the eighth grade classes sent me. And just the insanity of this whole thing kind of hit me. You know, I'm getting letters from first graders and second graders and eighth graders, and I'm getting these photographs. And it's like, you know, we miss you. You are, I'm getting choked up just thinking about it. But it's like, and I'm sitting here, you know, a mile away, and I can't even go into the school. Legally,
you can't go into the school right now?
Like, who does this? Who does that to a group of students? Like, obviously, I haven't done anything that would be like, that merits this, that merits doing this to those students. But yet this organization, you know, students have never been its priority. And it was probably the most jarring example and personal example for me of just how much students are not their priority.
See, you know I'm on board with you, Troy, but I need to play the devil's advocate for a second on this, because here you are, you know, and I'll go back to the student to teacher thing. Here you are being told, don't do this anymore. You keep doing it. And so you were removed. And you say, how could they do that to those kids? And they could say to you, how did you do that to those kids? Because if you would have helped toe the line more, or at least follow the directions you were given and told not to do certain things, you would still be there. So they could say you did that to those kids.
So let me tell you how I hear what you just said. If you don't be silent and let us continue to destroy children's education, then it will be your fault when we remove you. And then it will be your fault that when we remove you and those students get disappointed about the fact that we removed you because you were trying to defend their education and ensure that there still was a school system left for them. That's how I hear that.
Let me play it this way. Generally, there's a teacher in every school, right, who's been there too long, a little burnout, whatever, maybe phoning in it a little bit. I think we've all seen that at some point in life. And if some student in your school kept saying, you know what, this is ridiculous, they've been doing the same experiment for 20 years, this isn't relevant anymore, and they've held a protest or whatever, I'm sure you'd be very proud of them, quite honestly. But let's assume you're like, okay, Bobby, you've made your point, and I appreciate it, and you've got to understand that there's internal struggles here. She's a teacher, and you need to respect her. And we will have meetings to talk about this. And Bobby's like, listen, this is my eighth grade year, and this doesn't help me. I'm going into high school, and I appreciate that you're going to do something down the road, but and keeps going on. He might have every right and every correct reason for doing it, but as a principal, you'd have certain things that you said, you can't do it this way, though, Bobby.
So one of the things that people ask me quite a bit is a question like that. Like, would you tolerate this?
Yeah.
From your teachers? And my response is that I encourage it from my teachers. You know, if you go back to a blog post that I have, when I responded to the first warning resolution that was issued against me, I include an email at the end of it that I sent to my teachers, because part of the warning resolution was about my support for parents opting their kids out of park.
Right.
And so I sent an email to my teachers, giving them my position on it. And I stated in the beginning of the email that this is my position. You are free to disagree with it, and you are free to voice your disagreement. And in case they didn't believe it, I say the same thing at the end, and with even more emphasis, that one of the principles of a democracy is free and open debate. We don't make good decisions when we repress the voices of people who disagree with us, Matt. We just don't. And anybody who wants to make good decisions sets up an environment where people feel comfortable disagreeing with them. I can't tell you how many meetings I've had with just my administrative staff where I go in set on a particular way of doing things. And just after a roundabout conversation where one of the APs says, I'm not quite sure, another says this, I think I've changed probably more than half the decisions I've made because people feel free to disagree with me. And when you disagree, there's a process. What is the evidence behind your that opinion that you have, Angie? What is the evidence behind the opinion you have, Gary? Well, here's the evidence that I have to support my opinion. And then we all learn something from that process and we make better decisions. The example you just gave in terms of students or teachers, that is, I can't tell you how many times that's happened in Blaine where students have voiced disagreement about the science project, for example. I just told you I was working on my son's science project before. At Blaine, every grade, every year, was doing a science project. And so kids were voicing their disagreement with it. Parents were voicing their disagreement. And so we brought everyone together to listen to the experiences they've had with these projects and change the way we do it to where only two grade levels do the science project. And in the grade levels between, they get prepared with the theoretical framework for doing a science project. So you're not doing the same thing, the experimental method, every single year. You're learning, you're getting some in-depth learning about the experimental method and not trying to reproduce the same thing. But all of that and what we created was so much better and so much more workable, but it would have never happened if I had this my way or the highway environment that CPS has under this administration. And like when you want to do good, when you want to do well, you create that kind of environment. When you're transparent and there's no hidden agenda, you create that kind of environment. But when you have a hidden agenda, you have to repress that kind of environment because that environment will reveal that hidden agenda. It will reveal the contradictions that are inherent between what you're saying and what you're doing.
So you're going to make me a promise right now that in 3 years, when you're running for mayor, you're going to keep that same policy that if we elect Troy LaRavier as mayor and the Mark Conkles of the world and the John Cass and everybody comes knocking on your door and demanding transparency and, you know, you're not going to have just a bunch of yes men around you going out in the very scripted press conferences and things like that we're hearing about in the current administration.
And whatever I'm doing in the next 3 years and what I do tomorrow and every day in between, there will be transparency. So if you don't have a hidden agenda, again, if your agenda is not hidden, then there's no need for a lack of transparency.
Doesn't mean there's not an agenda. Just means it's not hidden.
As right.
He sits here,
hidden.
The
exactly.
As he sits here,
that's
the
it.
Hashtag resign Rob T-shirt.
That's it.
Troy LaRavier is with us. So you are about to become the head of, what is it called again, the Chicago Principals and Administrators Association.
Perfect.
I know that you will not be doing that still for a month or so, but what are the plans? What now that you're really, because of the removal of Blaine, you're able to really focus on day one and when you take over, what's the goal for the administration? What do you plan on doing with the association?
And so one of the things I've said quite a bit to folks is that I've been pretty effective at having my own voice heard. You know, I didn't accept the request. You know, I was called to run for the principalship. I was called by about four members of the governing board and asked if I would accept the nomination if they nominated me. And my point was that in accepting it, I said, I have had my voice heard. I've been fairly effective at doing it. If I accept the presidency, then I will do it in order to make sure everyone else's voice gets heard. And so you have to begin to establish mechanisms that currently don't exist to ensure that their voices get heard. Everything from surveys to working groups of principals who tackle a particular issue that they're all passionate about and create a policy position on that issue, write op-eds about that issue, work with the city council and the state legislature to influence legislation and policy that they're crafting around that issue. That we're getting the rank and file membership of the organization, principals from across the city, involved in that process of influencing policy. You asked me during the break, you know, if CPS could ignore us. Well, legally, they certainly can. But what they can't ignore is the unified voices of principals and principals doing that work that I just described to you, that can't be ignored. But currently the organization is not structured to pull principals together and do that kind of work. And so that is my main mission right now, to begin to restructure the organization and create the vehicles within it that bring principals together around issues they're passionate about, and work piece by piece on each one of those issues, whether it be budget, whether it be teacher evaluation, whether it be the maintenance and operations of their buildings that's being privatized and contracted out piece by piece. If that's what you're passionate about, there should be a mechanism and a vehicle for you to come together with other principals who are passionate about it and begin to do some work that pushes a policy agenda forward that benefits the school and benefits the students and the teachers who dedicate their lives to serving them.
That all sounds great, and I'm sure that a lot of principals will be on board with joining that fight. I also imagine there's other principals. Listen, with the guy in the soapbox that's preaching that everybody loves cheering, what's fun for people is looking up at him and cheering. Then when you say, now come up on the soapbox with me and let's effect change, that gets a little scary because I've got a good paying job and I've got time invested and I don't want to end up shoved out of my job like Troy was. Are you going to have trouble getting everybody on board to change the tides?
So I have a perfect example to respond in that. And so this has already been done. I actually did it as just a principal once. When Aramark first came in, principals across the district, CPS did this thing where they had us in summer professional development. And we hated it. But one of the things that we got out of it, we got to see each other. Like once a week, the professional development was so common and so repetitive. And one of the things we had learned, one of the things we began to hear from principal after principal was that their buildings were not being cleaned during the summer like they normally had been. In the summer, they do this thing, they do a top to bottom cleaning, and the kids walk in on day one and the place is spotless, floors are shining. That's what we were used to before privatization. Schools were a mess. I had principals telling me, principal told me she went to Home Depot to hire day laborers from the parking lot so that they could do the work out of her own pocket, so that they could do the work that the Aramark janitors were not doing. I had a principal cry, just break down and cry because of she could not spend her summer recruiting teachers and spending energy and time on that she needed to spend because she was trying to get her school clean. And so we decided to do a survey. And so we did a survey. 230 principals responded because we had heard all this anecdotal evidence. I wanted some data. And we did a survey and we asked principals what kind of shape their schools were in. And about 90% gave it the worst or next to worst in terms of comparing it to what it was before privatization, in terms of the next to worst rating. In addition to asking those questions about the cleanliness of the schools, I asked questions like, are you willing to have your results or your responses shared? If so, who? CPS? Are you fine with us sharing it with the media? Are you fine with us sharing it with the city council, public officials? In addition to that, I asked, would you be willing to talk to one, CPS, to two, state legislatures, three, city council, four, media? If you would be willing to talk to the media, would you be willing to talk one, off the record, two, as a known source? Right, so you see where I'm going.
Yeah.
So at the end of this survey, I not only have information about the horrible impact of this privatization on schools, but I know who's willing to talk about it and at what level they're willing to talk about it.
What was the rate of people willing to talk?
So I had about 50 willing to talk at some, 50 out of the 200 or so willing to talk to the media or public officials on some level or another. And so what I began to do is to share the data from the survey. Now, I went to the president of the association first and I said, I think we need to share this with the media because the privatization began in March. It is now August. And we have been complaining to Tim Cawley, who's now gone. We have been complaining to central office, and there was almost no responsiveness whatsoever. And that was another question on the survey. Have they been responsive?
Right.
And again, they got the worst rating possible. And so I told Clarice, we've already gone to CPS. That's the president of CPA. We've already gone to CPS. They're not being responsive. I think this needs to get into the media. That's the only thing these people care about is public opinion. We need to begin to influence public opinion by letting them know what's happening in our schools. And she declined. She said she didn't want to upset the relationship they had had with CPS. I'm like, you're just being honest. This is not like you're lying about them. This is what's actually happening in schools. And she didn't want to do it. And so I said, okay, if CPAA doesn't want to do it in its name, then I'll do it in mine. I'll do it on my own. And that's what I began to do. I shared the survey results with one media outlet after another, WBEZ, Catalyst, ABC, the Sun-Times, the Tribune. And the first two stories that came out were from WBEZ and Catalyst. And then apparently ABC7, one of their anchors, called me and said, can you connect? I'm interested in this story. Do you have someone I can interview? And so I had to go to that list of 50 principals and see there were some who were willing to talk to reporters on the phone, but to go on camera for a major news network.
Yeah.
And so I spent about 2 weeks connecting principals, connecting this data with reporters and connecting principals with the reporters once they got interested in the data, because the data was nothing without a voice behind it, without a principal to talk to. And so I connected about 25 different principals with probably 15 different reporters. And so ABC7 had a spot on it. And then I think the Saturday after that, the Sun-Times came out with a front page story, and it was titled.
So you've done it once.
Hold on. So it was called The Dirt on CPS. Now, this gets back to your question. And right after that front page headline came out, then all of a sudden, Aramark sent an email to all the principals. We've heard you. That's how it starts, right? We've heard. Now, you didn't hear us when we were calling you directly, but you heard it when the Sun-Times did a front page story. But my point is, every one of those principals got to participate at the level that they, this goes back to your question, at the level that they felt comfortable. Some just filled out the survey, and that data was a part of that 230. Right. Some filled out the survey and were fine with their results being shared. Some filled out the survey and was fine talking off the record. Some on the record. You hear what I'm saying? Everybody got the opportunity to participate at the level at which they were comfortable, and it made an impact.
So not everybody has to get up on the soapbox with you. They just have to give you the information or get involved in the level they're comfortable with. But the point is, you got to get everybody involved.
Exactly.
Troy LaRavier, where can people read your blog? Where do we find you on social media?
TroyLaRavier.net. It's LaRavierE, no dots, no dashes.
And on Twitter at Troy LaRavier, right?
Yes, sir.
All right. It's always good to see you. I look forward to speaking with you for years to come, and good luck in the new position.
Thanks so much, Matt. It's always a pleasure coming.